Welcome, welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Kelvin Butenhoff, coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. Good morning, Madison. Thanks for joining us on WMDX. You can always call or text at 844-967-2789, 844-96-A-PARTY. Leave comments on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and or Twitter. Later on in this hour at 11:30, our colleague here at Civic Media, Jimmy Cuska, will be joining us. We'll do a little recap of yesterday's election, particularly focusing on school referendums. And then at 11:50, Civic Media meteorologist Brittany Merlot will be here for Wednesday Weather and Wine. And we're going to find out just how long this incredible weather. It's so nice out right now.
Did I tell you next Tuesday? 63.
That's great. But
not great.
It's not great.
It's not great.
So anyway, that's what's coming up. Stick around with us. I wanted to remind you also, we talked about this yesterday. If you would like to email the show, we have made it easier.
Oh, yes,
since
indeed.
No one can spell my name.
It's J-A-N-E. That's how you spell it.
Yes. Well, it's Jane Says.
Jane Says.
At civicmedia.us.
So as in the name of the song that we play at the top of the show.
Exactly. So if you would like to send us an email, if you have a suggestion for a guest or a topic or anything, you can shoot an email to janesays@civicmedia.us and it'll get to us.
If you have any complaints, send them to Calvin's email.
Just sweetcalb@civicmedia.us.
Yep. Or he also has boardlord@civicmedia.us, callingtonjcalcium@civicmedia.us.
There's lots of addresses.
Yeah, there's like 50 emails.
But if you want to directly get to us, janesays@civicmedia.us. All right, we're going to do a little getting to know you segment.
I'm Greg.
About our new person who entered the race to take on U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin.
Are you talking about Wisconsin landowner and mustachio gentleman Eric Hovde?
I am. Eric Hovde officially yesterday announced he is all in. He is going to be running to take on U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin, our junior senator. We have a clip from Mr. Hovde, I believe, Calvin. And we'll take a listen to that. This is from Lawrence O'Donnell on MSNBC last night. It should be in there.
How you doing?
Eric Hovde.
Eric Hovde.
Announcing yesterday. He will be running. Calvin's looking for it. That's all right. According to this article in the Wisconsin Examiner, which is not necessarily non-biased, Hovde, looking like Tom Selleck with a thick mustache, delivered a boilerplate speech invoking the American dream and Ronald Reagan that drew a few brief smatterings of polite applause, delivered no zingers, gave no indication why he's running other than the requisites, I love my country, and a few jabs at the Biden administration for withdrawing from Afghanistan under a deal that Donald Trump brokered and driving up the national debt.
Let's go for that clip.
So why am I here today? It's really simple. I love my country. And everywhere I look today in my country, I see it failing.
Eric Hovde yesterday in Madison at one of his company's properties, I believe. That's just a couple blocks away from the Capitol.
Well, I'm probably wrong. I'm not going to say it never happens, but I'm going to say this. Why does the GOP, why do people who run for office have to always say that? The country is failing. There's so many ways you can say you're unhappy with the direction of this country. There's so many ways you can say the way things are being done, I wouldn't do it like that. I do it in a more efficient, more blah, 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 blah. But it always has to be the doomsday. We are failing. We are done. America's not free. And I am the only person who can save you from it. How does that fire people up ever?
Because fear sells. Fear is very effective as a motivational force. It is.
I guess, but
that's the whole, they're coming for your jobs. They're coming for your guns. They're coming for you. If Trump has said it himself, if I am held accountable for my financial crimes, you're going to be next. Well, they're coming for you.
And I don't disagree with that. I think my point is the writing, is the finessing, the language. I don't know how, like, to me, listening to him speak couldn't fire up, like, anybody. It couldn't fire up a fireplace. It doesn't do anything. It's so stilted. It's so mechanical that I don't understand how anyone can listen to that and go, yeah.
He's my guy.
It's just awful.
Tammy Baldwin also appearing on that same show with Lawrence O'Donnell. Let's take a listen.
What are the stakes for the people of Wisconsin in a campaign between you and a Republican like this millionaire who's decided to run against you?
Yeah, so Mitch McConnell must be thrilled his top recruit said yes. But let's face it. Eric Hovde owns a $2.8 billion California bank, has a $7 million California Laguna Beach mansion, and was named most influential person in Orange County 3 years in a row. We don't have an Orange County in Wisconsin. We don't grow oranges here. He is definitely a Californian. But not only did Mitch McConnell get a great recruit for their perspective, but he also has somebody who's going to toe the McConnell agenda. Eric Hovde supports a national abortion ban. He supports cutting Social Security. And he also wants to overturn or repeal the Affordable Care Act.
That's Tammy Baldwin appearing with Lawrence O'Donnell on MSNBC last night. The Last Word, talking about Eric Hovde announcing that he is jumping into the race to take on Tammy Baldwin. There was an article from Journal Sentinel columnist Dan Bice a while ago. He points out that Hovde has a pretty spotty voting record. He did vote absentee from California in last spring's Supreme Court race in Wisconsin. Again, he did grow up here. His mm-hmm. family is here. He went to school here. And then it's my understanding after he graduated from college, he moved to D.C. Mm-hmm. for 24 years.
Yeah.
Until 2011, which is the first time he tried to run. He ran against Tammy Baldwin. And so in 2011, he came back to Madison and bought that house.
Yeah. I think what we're seeing here is I don't think the man wants to run, honestly. I think if he really wanted to be the senator, we would have known a while ago. There'd be more energy there. But, you know, Eric Hovde, like, he's announcing now in the end of February, which gives him roughly five months to make his case and then run harder for the last few weeks of the election. I feel like if he really wanted this,
you would have been in much earlier.
Earlier, with more energy, more money. He'd have a PR team teaching him how to be a human on stage. This honestly, and don't, you know, come at me. I don't care. This sounds like the energy that Tom Barrett had when he ran against Scott Walker in the recall. When you watched it happen, it was just like, this was a man who didn't really want to be governor. He did it because he was the guy. He was the guy that
had. You're the one. We're picking you.
Yeah. And if Eric Hovde is the best the GOP has, oofers.
Well, it's certainly not a... He lost the last time he tried this.
Yeah, and now they want to... I mean, if he self-finances, that's one thing, but... Besides people who are going to write checks because they have the money to burn, who wants to give this guy money? Like he's a loser. And in their mind, he's a loser. He's a rich loser, but he's a loser nonetheless.
It will just be interesting to see. And I think what Tammy Baldwin said was particularly interesting about what he actually supports. So
yes.
He supports a national abortion ban.
Yes.
He wants to repeal Obamacare. I would respect you more if you actually came out on stage and owned that.
Which they just can't do now. It's weird.
Because why would they? Because abortion bans are massively unpopular.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing you wanted more than anything else in your party, you finally got in your hands, and now it's too hot. You got to drop it, and you got to find different ways of saying it. So you have to say, this country is failing?
Well, and again, then what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
Tell me the actions that you intend to take.
Yep.
That's going to fix these things.
I mean,
because I'm not disagreeing that we don't have our healthcare system is broken.
Yeah.
Our childcare system is broken. There are all kinds of issues in this country that I think the vast majority of us agree on.
And, you know, I think Todd said this morning, if you standing on stage, the first words out of your mouth should have been, yeah, I live in California, but I'm a Wisconsinite at heart. It's in my blood. It's in my bones. It's in my roots. And I want to come here and help lead. And I am here. I'm, you know, sort of own the fact that, yeah, you do have another property. Like, there's no getting around that. You can't,
you can't lie about it.
You can't get away from it. There are websites dedicated to showing that. But my, so own it. Take a hold of that message, and then you got it. And then say, I don't like the direction Wisconsin's going in, and I want to do something about it.
Well, it's interesting. I have not seen it myself, but I've seen it. He did have an ad come out where he never mentioned Wisconsin once.
Yeah, I think
he
that's...
He never even mentioned Wisconsin. 844-967-2789. Mike from Kenosha. Good morning, Mike. Thank you so much for joining us. What do you want to say?
Thanks. Good morning. Love the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, you know, I'm listening to all these things that need attention, things that are underperforming, that the public, quite frankly, we deserve much, much better than we've been getting for 40 years plus. This is the result. This is what you get when you have a party that wants to remove or destroy a public policy for the motivation of greed and privatization. You know, just about everything that we've talked about for months, as far as, you know, things that are wrong and need attention, are neglected issues that have been purposely run down. I mean, go down the list.
Yes.
The VA, you know.
And infrastructure. Go so through. The list goes on and on and on, right, Mike?
Well, and the problem is we, the peeps, are we've been, you know, responding like the frog in the warming water. It doesn't have to be this way. Matter of fact, it wasn't like this in the first half of my life.
Mike, I'm going to ask you to hang on for 1 second because we're up against the clock. Stay with us if you want to chime in on this. 844-967-2789. We'll continue this conversation. This is Matt Nair on air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome to Matt Nair on air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Sweet Cal B on the board. You can always join us. Call or text 844-967-2789. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform Elon Ruined. We are talking about Eric Hovde jumping into the race to run against Wisconsin's junior U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin. Your thoughts? Good idea? Bad idea? Is he a great candidate? Is it, you know, are you excited? 844-967-2789. Mike from Kenosha, thank you for your patience. I wanted to let you finish up what you were saying, Mike. Go ahead.
Yeah. Thank you very much. You know, when we look through all of the, not all, but many of the serious challenges that we've found ourselves in over the last couple decades, just about all of them were self-inflicted, you know, whether it be through deregulation or party shaming, you know, owning the libs has been really their, the opposition, their whole game plan, really, since the Reagan era. So, you know, unfortunately, you know, we're in this time to where deep-rooted hatred has become the byproduct of this attack on our democracy. The divide and conquer mechanisms have worked. That's why, you know, we're at this stage, I think. So finally, to end my comment, thank you for allowing me.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, when we're talking about shutting down a government again because they have this darn new policy of having short-term funding cycles instead of long-term 2-year cycles, that in itself harms all of us. It harms our credit rating. And at the same time, they're talking about funding issues and shortages and our deficits. They don't talk about the rich not paying their fair share in the corporation. So we've got our work cut out. A lot of us are pretty concerned about our immediate future. Yeah. And I don't think we have any more time to waste, guys.
No,
I agree. We agree with you completely, Mike. This is very, very serious, and it's really quite frightening. And that's why I think it is critically important to talk to the people in your circle and in your life without attacking anybody, but laying out facts.
Yep.
Laying out some facts.
You know, something interesting that he said, Mike said, mirrored a text earlier from the 920 using the term owning the libs. And that, I feel, needs to be discussed a little bit more in detail down the road, because it does show to that idea we were talking about, as well as, you know, woke versus not woke. The GOP seems to have hooked their wagon into this star that isn't about making progress on their terms, whether it's abortion, whatever. Their single goal is to do and say things which inflame the opposition and makes their fans feel good. And I say that because that's what's happening in comedy now. I promise this will connect. A lot of these anti-woke comics, these guys who are like, I can't say anything, so I'll say whatever I want. They don't care about their jokes. They don't care about being funny. They care about making a statement, getting an adverse reaction from one group, which makes another group excited.
And they feel validated by
it. Validated, and then they say, that's my guy. So that term owning the libs now being used so much has much more weight than just being like owning the libs. It is their MO now.
And a source of pleasure.
Because they can't own their own ideologies.
Well, what I think is really frightening, and as Mike pointed out too, it's this deep-seated hatred and this othering. And yeah, it works. Hatred and fear scaring people absolutely works. And I've always been concerned from the very beginning with the hardcore Trump supporters.
Mm-hmm.
What they like is that he is going to hurt the people they don't like. Not them. Never them. But anything punitive is going to be against the people with which they disagree.
Yes. And these individuals who are taking such joy or schadenfreude in this all, you ask them what they were, the first things they probably say would be Christian, if not American, followed by. And that's the scariest thing of all when it comes down to it, is that these individuals have made it their life's mission to try to convince others that this person and his image was sent by God.
But I've also heard the argument that God selects imperfect vessels.
Well, boy, and did he knock it out of the park with that one.
Well, even God can be an overachiever sometimes, you know.
Please send all angry letters to
Calvin.
Sweet Cal C at civicmedia.gov.
Now, this is a discussion we're going to continue to have. I think there are some people, no matter how you try to dialogue with them,
mm-hmm,
it's almost impossible.
Yeah.
But there are others that we can still connect. I still believe that we have more in common than we have that divides us. We do.
I do not disagree with you at all. I think you are absolutely correct. And as we discussed before, a few weeks ago, if you want to have that dialogue, that really tough dialogue, whether it's with family, former friends, you have to kind of almost say to yourself, all right, I'm going to do this. This is going to be a long process, and I have to be willing to be frustrated and angry, but I have to talk to this person and be the calm factor.
Yes. Screaming doesn't...
And I'm not going to convince them the first time.
No.
Or the second.
Or even the fifth.
But if it's that important to you, I think it's possible.
Well, and if we talked about before, if you have some way to get involved and help with voter turnout yes. or voter education mm-hmm. or voter registration, there's all kinds of groups that that you can reach out to. And it is critically, critically important that we do better than 66% turnout in this November election.
We shouldn't pat ourselves on the back for 66%.
No, we should be embarrassed by
yeah.
that.
And to go back to what we were talking about yesterday on the day of the primary, myvote.wi.gov.
Everything you need.
Everything you need, registration information, ballot information, polling location. Even if you go on that website and write that stuff down and talk to your neighbors, you're doing the good work, because the voting is a right. But some people treat it as a nuisance.
Yeah, as an inconvenience.
I can't do it today. I'll do it later. Well, you waited too long. So be an agent of good.
Be an agent. Ooh.
Ooh.
Ooh. MOA merch. Be an agent of good.
Be on the cheese. Be an agent of Gouda.
I'd like. Oh. There's all kinds of potential there. All right. News is next, followed by a great entertainment minute with Pete Schwabba. When we return, Jimmy Cuska will be here. We'll break down some of the election results from last night, particularly as it refers to school referenda. Thank you so much for listening. Stay with us. This is Matt Nair on air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Getting to know you, getting to feel free and easy. When I am with you, getting to know what to say. Haven't you noticed? Suddenly I'm
Good morning. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvin on the board, coming to you from our studio in beautiful downtown Waukesha. Shout out to everybody in Madison listening on WMDX. Thank you so very much for joining us. If you ever want to call or text, 844-967-2789. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and or Twitter. Joining us after a real long day yesterday and probably a pretty long night, our colleague at Civic Media, Jimmy Cuska, with our news department is here. Good morning, Jimmy. Thank you so much for squeezing us in. You guys have been crazy busy.
Yeah, well, anytime there's an election night, it means two things. One, it means free pizza, right? That's always the standard in a newsroom. But it also means a lot of time working with county clerks on going through results. And in particular, for a lot of these elections, working together across counties to figure out things like school boards and referendum and things like that.
So there were a whole bunch of referenda on the ballot last night for schools. How did that all shake out?
Well, last night we had, so we have 101 questions on ballots this spring, but only 10 of them were on the ballots last night. 91 of them will be on the April ballot, but we had 10. And this morning we confirmed in our news department today that 4 of the 10 questions passed. 7 districts put up 10 questions. That means 3 districts asked 2 questions. So 4 of 10, a 40% passage rate last night, unofficially.
That's got to be pretty disappointing for some of these communities.
I think so. But if you look at the recent trends, if you look at last year's numbers in the spring, we had kind of a similar number, right? The last couple of elections have been pretty tough. I mean, just over 50% in the last spring election in 2023. You look back even to the springs before that, the passage rates have been kind of hovering around that 50 to 60% mark. So 40%, it does feel low out of 10 referenda, but honestly, within the realm of expectation, given, things like inflation, just like the trend of property taxes increasing, things like that. I think that 40% is probably in the realm of expectation.
I'm curious, Jimmy, I realize this is speculative, but for these districts where these referenda did not pass, what's going to happen to these schools?
So it greatly depends on which type of referendum they were seeking. So 5 of the questions asked were on facilities questions. So they were asking to issue debt to go and add on to facilities or renovate facilities. So in those cases, for smaller districts, it largely means they got to go back to the drawing board and figure out something else to do with the facilities they have. For a larger district that was trying to pass a facility referendum, you know, it likely means some form of building consolidation. You know, there are some larger districts proposing to combine elementary or middle or even high schools in the fall. But in the facility referendums last night, I don't think anything was quite that dire. I know that one that failed was asking for $77 million in southeastern Wisconsin for facilities. And these things are needed. A lot of these facilities are very outdated, and they want to make modern learning environments for students. But the facilities ones failing, I don't think really, it affects schools, right? And there's an impact in having to kind of go back to the drawing board. But I think the area where you look and you say, here's where the impact's being felt, it's been this trend towards having operational referenda. And what this means is they're asking taxpayers to increase the amount of money they can levy in taxes to help pay for, you know, expenses, you know, salaries and keeping the lights on, things like that. And we had five of those questions last night. Only two of those passed. And for districts that don't pass those operational, it means that now they have this hole in their budget they have to manage through other means. And through other means, in most cases, means they need to find ways to cut, whether it's cutting extracurriculars, whether it's not filling staff positions. That's where they need to find and balance their budgets. And those are things that are outlined when they go through the referendum process. Menominee is one district in northwestern Wisconsin, for example, that listed some of the consequences of not passing their operational. And it's a list of about 15 things, and they're all pretty common when you talk about operational referendum and what happens if you have to balance that budget. But it does mention things like loss of programming, loss of extracurriculars, you know, combining some positions, things like that. So those impacts, I think, are a little more greatly felt.
Jimmy, you mentioned going back to the drawing board now that it's done. If the referendums failed, they go back and try again. Do they lower their price, not prices, do they lower the amount of money they need? Or, you know, in the sense of like just advertising, do they put out a commercial saying, look at your school referendums and vote on, you know, like try to get people informed? Because when someone sees raising taxes, or I don't have a child, but some people look at them like, what do I care about schools? I don't have a kid. No. Are there ways of getting the people on board and bringing them into the process so they are more informed on the language and what needs to happen for these schools?
One of the ways that we got a referendum passed in my district, and I'm on a school board in southwestern Wisconsin, we got ours passed. And I don't know if there was a magic wand you wave to say, yes, this is going to pass. But a lot of it has to do with just your standard communication and engagement. Who are you getting into your building? How are you informing them of what needs to be done? I think one of the most effective ways we did it was actually, I would go out to events happening in our community, and I would bring a board with me, a big, like not a sandwich board that I wore, but you know, a big board that I would carry around, and I'd have people, I'd talk to them about it, and I would get some very honest and very candid feedback.
Yeah.
But it was interesting because when you talk to one person and other people gather around, even if they come into it not knowing much about it, or they're firmly for or against, they still hear the perspective of why the school seeks these things.
Yeah.
You know, in our case, we had to replace a 125-year-old school. It was pretty obvious we needed a new facility. And I think that resonated with people. But I know that in some districts where maybe there's been recent controversy with an administrator or a school board, these messages are harder to get through because people look at it like, okay, well, you know, we had all this trouble with, you know, a principal or a superintendent. Why would we agree to raise money? Or maybe you recently passed a referendum and you've acquired now, say, $25 million or $50 million of taxpayer money. And now you go back and say, we need more for operational.
Yeah.
Well, people aren't going to go to the wallet twice to help pay for that. It's a variable in every single district. But overall, communication and just getting in front of people, I think, are the keys.
If you're just joining us, our colleague at Civic Media with the news department, Jimmy Cuska, is here. And we're talking about some of the results from last night's election, particularly talking about the school board's referenda, or the school referendum, actually. What's really concerning, Jimmy, especially for some of these smaller communities, is if they're going to have to close some of these schools and merge some of these schools. Because that, in again, so many of our smaller communities, the school is the anchor for everything.
Well, you look at the state, and right now, 70% of districts in the state are reporting declining enrollment. Declining enrollment means less funding, and less funding obviously means that if you're trying to keep up the same amount of classes, programming, teachers, extracurriculars, now there's less of that to go to. It's compounded by other factors, but declining enrollment is a huge one. And for our rural districts, which make up over half of all school districts in the state, you know, this problem is magnified because you can't just combine two elementary schools into one to solve some of the issue in budgeting. You only have one elementary school, or in some cases you're at a K through 12 already. You've already brought everybody into one space.
Where are you going?
Yep. So the options are limited because schools can't just say, well, we're going to charge more in tuition. Well, it doesn't work that way. You receive money based on the number of students you have, and you receive some from state funding, and you get a tiny portion from federal dollars, and you get a handful of donations as well. So the options to raise money as a district are extremely limited, and it's tied to the number of students. And yes, it does lead to some difficult conversations. I know last year, none of the ones last night, but last year there were two districts that in their operational referendum said a consequence of not passing would mean district consolidation, meaning that their district would be split up into the neighboring districts. And that actually raises the taxes, the property taxes, all the way around because of increased needs for transportation and the need to transition out of old facilities.
That's something I was wondering too. The wording that is always, when you throw that in there, that's interesting.
It is. And, wording has to be very careful because you can't go out and raise the doom and gloom. Like, you got to pass this or else, because people don't respond well to that. They feel threatened by that.
Sure.
But if it is plausible, a consolidation process for a district takes multiple years. So it's not something that happens immediately, but in these districts cases, they put it on the table saying, look, right now we have a big problem in funding our school. If we don't get this money, there's really nothing we can do because we can't meet the minimum standards to have X number of teachers and X number of buildings open for the students we have. So they're kind of in a bind. I think an interesting statistic, and this is certainly going to rise this year, is that out of Wisconsin's 421 school districts, 100 of them receive 10% of their funding from referendum. So think about that for a second. They've had to go above the property tax amounts that are set to bring it. Not only that, there are a handful that are actually receiving over a quarter of their funding from referendum. So that is something to consider too in all of this, that schools are increasingly having to go to referendum. And the explosion this year, of course, is due to the expiration of the federal COVID funds. You can't spend any more after September. And this is leaving a big hole in budgets for school districts next year as they grapple with inflation, rising costs of salaries and materials, transportation, et cetera. So now you see already this year, we have 101 questions on spring ballots alone. And we still have two fall elections to go through. We already have seen 101 questions on ballots this spring. And I think about two-thirds of those right now, right around two-thirds, are operational types where they're just looking to keep the lights on.
Expect a lot of expect a lot of upcoming bake sales at school where the brownies are $900 a piece.
For real. I mean, like, now I just think about, like, I want to just be super stinking stupid rich to be like, what do you need? I'll pay for it. Like, I just...
Well, and then when you consider the amount of money that is going to private voucher schools...
Ding, 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 ding.
As opposed to our public schools.
There's an interesting bill that just went through yesterday. In fact, we've had some reaction to it in that they are trying to decouple the funding of voucher programs from property taxes so that the public school districts don't have to levy that anymore as property taxes. Instead, it'll come out of state funding. So there's some interesting calculations happening, as that's one of the biggest complaints of districts is that, why do we have to levy this money and then send it off? Well, now they're trying to take that part of it and move it elsewhere as they try to fund that thing. So that's something that actually is just happening in the last couple of days here.
Anything else in the couple of minutes we have left, Jimmy, that stuck out from last night's or yesterday's election?
Yesterday's election, I think, was interesting on a school board front. And I'll just share this too, because when we were covering the state last night, there were very few school board primaries. And I know that when we talk about school boards, people are thinking, well, these things are very contentious. You're getting a lot of people involved in these. But really, I in the Milwaukee area, there were only four, for example, only four school board primaries in the Milwaukee area. There were a couple upstate, but not many. I would say under a dozen. We cover a lot of the state, but not all of it. But I think I counted, we only had seven on our stations that we were tracking. So when you talk about school boards, we didn't have a lot of primaries. There are a lot of contended seats, but we didn't have primaries where we have like nine candidates for, two spots or anything like that. There were really only a handful. And I thought that was an interesting note from last night as well.
I mean, with all the contention, all the, I don't want to say the mega Republicans, but just all that poison making its way down the school board, it almost seems like people are like, I don't want this. It's not something I want to seek because it just seems way too hard. Like, I'd love to be on the school board to help shape the school, to help shape the curriculum. But if I'm going to get screamed at.
You want the headache.
Yeah.
Just to react quickly to that here in the last couple of seconds, the thing is that a lot of the priorities in these, a lot of these things were kind of inspired nationally, right? There were things that were organized more regionally or nationally.
Yeah.
But a lot of that effort in Wisconsin hasn't actually gone through school. There's been a few. I mean, we've seen book ban stories. We've seen a few of those things go through school boards. There's a couple of school boards in eastern Wisconsin that are very famous for adopting these resolutions. But we're seeing a lot of these things, like the Parental Bill of Rights, the review of school curriculum. These things are actually in the legislature. Mm-hmm. In fact, the Parental Bill of Rights actually passed the legislature.
Yep. Yep.
So these things are happening at the legislative level in Wisconsin, not at the school board level. So that's one thing that's different about our state versus other states, is that these things are happening in our legislature.
Jimmy Cuska is part of our wonderful news department at Civic Media. You guys are doing you're doing great work, Jimmy, the entire news department. And go to our newly updated Fluffed website, civicmedia.us, and check out the news tab. And there's just so much wonderful information there. Thank you so much for making time for us, Jimmy.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Thanks for pitching, talk about the news tab. We've got at least a half dozen stories up this morning already on the primary.
Check it out. It looks great. Jimmy Cuska. When we return, it is Wednesday Weather and Wine with Civic Media meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Cool Hand Calvin on the board.
Ooh, I like that one.
In our studio in downtown Waukesha, you can always join us, 844-967-2789, 844-96.
Party.
Leave a message on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Very excited. She's going to be joining us every Wednesday at this time, Civic Media meteorologist Brittany Merlot, joining us for Wednesday Weather and Wine with Brittany Merlot.
That's DJ Flip mix to you.
Where did that come from?
It came from something, Brittany, you said, well, of course, being meteorological, there was a flip mix in the snow, correct? Like rain to snow?
Yeah.
I can't believe I remembered that.
Flip mix or something, how it happened. Yep. But I was like, that flip mix line is going to be right by Kenosha. And then all of a sudden, that was my new nickname.
He listens to your forecast way too closely. I'm just saying.
I pay attention when she's on the show. Don't make me sound like a creeper.
I think you're a weather stalker. I'm not sure. There's just saying. I'm throwing it out there. No, we love your forecast. What's going on? Are we going to be in 85 degrees now by the end of March? What is this?
It sure feels like it, doesn't it?
It does.
Gosh. Yeah.
Who just hit 61 degrees? Let me go check that out. Kenosha. Speaking of Kenosha.
Today.
60, right now, 61 degrees in Kenosha.
Wow.
Oh, that's my neck of the woods. That's my home.
Yeah, it's pretty warm over there.
Glad I packed shorts.
I hope you did. Sandals, flip-flops.
Some board shorts and flip-flops.
Is this weather pattern going to continue for a while?
Unfortunately, yeah. I mean, I guess fortunately, if you love the warmth in winter, but this is just way too warm for February.
Yeah.
Gosh. So we'll have the warmest day is today. We'll cool temperatures down by just a few degrees tomorrow. So basically still pretty mild,
pretty nice.
And comfortable, spring-like. Yeah. Abundant sunshine too. I mean, that's making me smile. I'm not going to lie. I do like the snow, but it's nice.
It's hard to go outside when it's like this and go, this is terrible. I hate this, because it's lovely. It feels like the middle of May.
Yeah.
But it's the end of February and we still have several months to go. I told Greg, my daffodils are coming up. And I'm like, you guys, you're rushing it. You're rushing it. They should normally be under snow, you know, and then they would be a little insulated. So next week,
I mean,
do we have any colder weather coming our way?
So right now we're sitting 20 to 30 degrees above average. So extremely way too warm. We'll cool down on Friday. Will be the coolest day. And it's only temporary because we start to pump the temperatures up by Saturday and we're back into the mild temperatures again by Sunday and into next week. And in fact, we could be breaking records by Tuesday as we could hit some mid to upper 60s are possible. So, I mean, I am going to say that warmth right there next week is going to surge in out ahead of a storm system that is headed our way. So
okay.
You know how we always get warm right before that? So the winds are going to pull that warmth in. And then, of course, we're looking at rain headed our way by Tuesday, and it could flip to some snowfall, especially hopefully up to the northern areas who need it the most for Wednesday. And then that system kicks on out of here by Thursday, and we get mild again, still above average.
Didn't you say? I'm sorry, go on.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, didn't you say this morning that our lows right now, wait, what was it? How did you phrase it? You said that right now our lows are what the average highs would usually be?
Yes. Yeah. So the coldest that we're getting right now are overnight lows. That's where our typical February, end of February highs should be. That should be the warmest that we're getting, but that's the coldest that we're getting, which is the extreme opposite.
It's got to be such a mess for our farmers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, even it's either drought or it's too much rain or not enough rain. And now it's too warm and they need a certain amount of cold. And it's just.
And now we need funding to help them. And I think they should get it because they can't control the weather. But did that snowfall that happened last month? Yes. Because I came home to the snowfall.
The snow, yeah.
Did that do anything of value for the farmers?
Well, you guys got it more south. So yeah. Southern farmers, yes. But us northern farmers, we are a little bit worried up here. I mean, I know Antigo is huge for potato farming, and they were concerned months ago, the first warm snap that we had of bugs coming up.
Yes.
Starting to eat and do different things. And
yes.
There's going to be a ripple effect. We can't just sit here and smile and feel like spring and everything's okay. It's not.
No, it really isn't. And we notice, just talking about bugs showing up, we've had our box elder bug infestation is back.
Yeah, which is usually a fall thing, right?
And now I'm, even at home, I'm finding those little red beetles. They look like ladybugs, but they're all coming out too. They're 2 months early. This is too soon.
It's too early. And I think we're supposed to get the cicadas this year as well. So I wonder if they're affected by this warming climate.
We just talked to the head entomologist at the Insect Diagnostic Lab in Madison. PJ Leash was on with us on Monday. It's a 17-year cycle.
Yep.
So this is not weather related. I just think they're underachieving cicadas because they only work every 17 years.
Typical Gen Zers. Typical Gen Z. My gosh, Calvin, your generation just doesn't want to work at all.
Laying in that cicada hammock, not doing anything.
Cicada. Oh, I want to see that now on TikTok. Just a tiny little hammock with a cicada in it, with an itty bitty drink, and it's like, and it's just saying later.
Later, man. All right. Well, the warm weather is going to continue. Brittany Merlot, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Hopefully the West Coast is going to catch a break and they're not going to get creamed by anything in the next couple of weeks. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Yeah. But welcome to the weekly installment of Wednesday Wine and Weather with Brittany Merlot. Maybe next week I'll wear my red wine socks.
You
should.
That would be fine.
We did get a question asking if Merlot was your real last name.
Yes, it is.
I told him, I said, the first time I met you, it's like, if you didn't make that up, you should have, because it's good.
I was thinking I should have made up a weather last name, but, you know,
no,
wine it is.
Perfect. Brittany Merlot, thank you so very, very much. We will see you next week, Wednesday at 11:50. News is on the way next. Stay close for that. Thank you so very, very much for listening today and calling and for texting. I really hope you find some joy today. And you have the chance to share it. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.